Now on the line with me, I'm very excited to have Professor Michelle Arrow from Macquarie University. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Thank you for joining us so last minute. Very much on topic. As I mentioned, your article's been published in The Conversation and obviously republished in Women's Agenda. And you've made the comment that neither of the leaders have really addressed women's issues. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, I think one of the things that I was surprised by, I mean, I'm a historian of women in politics and women in women's political engagement. And one of the things I thought in the lead up to the election, given that women's issues had been such a big part of the kind of broader political conversation all through 2021, really from the moment that Brittany Higgins went public with her allegation of sexual assault in Parliament House, they had been such an important part of the political conversation. And I think a lot of people were anticipating that women's issues would really be at the heart of the election campaign, that they would be a very important part of the conversation. And they really haven't been. Certainly for the first few weeks, the only woman who was really featuring, at least on the LNP side, was Catherine Deves, the transphobic candidate who had this horrific tweet archive of ever more awful things that she was saying about transgender women. Mm-hmm. And then the Labor Party in its election campaign launch made a big bid for women's votes, I think, around low-paid workers and trying to make gender equity in wages a really important part of their campaign. But it really hasn't featured as much as I think many people were expecting. And I find that sort of strange.
Sure. And I mean, what risk do they run by not reaching out to the women's agenda?
Yeah. I mean, I think the LNP, I mean, again, this is where I've been very surprised, because the Liberal Party, you know, I mean, Catherine Murphy had this great phrase around the time of the Brittany Higgins story where she said, look, you know, the Liberal Party is very focused on appealing and talking to men who might vote Labor. Mm-hmm. That's their core, sort of the demographic they've identified that can switch towards them. And so really that's who they talk to all the time. The Labor Party last time did much better with women voters than it did with men. Mm-hmm. And so I think the Labor Party has continued to speak to them in a way that is sort of speaking in the language of care, in the language of gender equality, but without necessarily making a big headline pitch to women. And I think that's partly because Australia has this long history, well, long and more recent history of really virulent misogyny in political life. If we think back to the treatment of Julia Gillard and the polarising impact that she had, in the sense that a lot of men wouldn't vote for her because she was a woman.
Yes.
So I think that Labor is trying to kind of still retain some of the votes of male voters while also appealing to women in a way that is coded somewhat, you know, as well as more concrete promises. Obviously, the Labor Party has made promises on childcare, on aged care, on gender pay equity. Those issues have been important. But it's really interesting to me that the Liberal Party is not making an appeal to women, even in that way, which I find extraordinary.
And do you think they've just run the numbers and thought that's just not going to be an issue, or there's actually a fundamental problem within the party that they just don't care?
I think it's both. I think one of the real problems for both parties, you know, for the Liberal Party in particular, is that when you look back to the early 90s, both political parties had around the same number of women MPs.
Yes.
By now, the Labor Party has almost reached parity. So they've got 47% of their MPs are women. Mm. And that's because they introduced a quota system.
Yeah.
The Liberal Party said, no, we don't need quotas. We can do it on merit. And they've only increased the number of women MPs from 11% to 26%.
Wow.
So what that means is that when you've got the party room sitting around the table deciding how their policies will look, mm-hmm. what the discussion, you know, who are they appealing to? They only see themselves. They see white men. And so they're really not, you know, there's very few women sitting around that table in cabinet or in the party who are women, you know, parents of young children, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really narrow view. And I think then it becomes more and more self-reinforcing. And I think they've also done a kind of calculation that they think, well, you know, the demographics of political change are such that, you know, educated voters are moving towards the Labor Party and moving towards teal candidates.
Yes.
So we can maybe pick up some male voters in the outer suburban seats who might be leaning towards One Nation or Clive Palmer, and we can get their preferences. You know, so it's I mean, some political commentators have described it pretty crudely as the boganisation of the Liberal Party. And I don't like that term because I think it's just pretty offensive in a lot of ways. But what it suggests is a kind of cross-class. So Labor, you know, the sort of traditional stronghold of Labor Party, which is male blue-collar voters,
yes,
are kind of moving, you know, into the Liberal Party, and women, conservative professional women, are moving the other way. And so it's a really interesting, if you think about Australia's longer term political history, women used to vote Liberal.
Yes.
You know, the sort of general truism was that women voted Conservative, you know, blue collar men voted Labor, but those kind of categories are dissolving and changing. And that's what makes this election so interesting from a historical point of view too.
Oh, brilliant. So I've got to ask the question, you made the comment, Scott Morrison said, "I can change statement." Do you think that was a whistle, dog whistle towards women, or straight up gaslighting?
I think it was. Well, yes, I think it's both.
Yeah. Right?
So I think there was some interesting, there was a focus group that came out just before he made that statement that Samantha Maiden reported on, and it was kind of pretty devastating reading, I imagine, if you're the Liberal leader, because it was just all these women just going, "I hate him. I want him gone. I don't really have any other policy positions in this election.
Yeah.
I just want him gone." So I think for a lot of women, he's a really polarising figure. He kind of has that sort of the bloke who knows everything at the barbecue kind of vibe to him. And he, I think, the sort of bulldozer idea, the guy that had to be told by his wife that rape was an important and significant issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's sort of got that Loki bluster, which I think a lot of women are automatically turned off by. And I think the "I can change" message was designed to sort of say to those women, "Look, I know I've not been great, but I can change." But then, of course, he's basically doing exactly the same thing this week. So I don't think that was anything but a marketing ploy to try and turn around some of those voters. And who knows? Maybe it will work. I mean, you know, I think it is really interesting because women are a big category of voters. There's still a number of women voters who are undecided. If the polls are to be believed, women have been peeling off from the Liberal Party really since Brittany Higgins went public with her allegation.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been burned on polls before. We don't know. You know, I think there's a real it's a bit still up for grabs, I think. And maybe he will win some women back with that.
Well, and so the interesting thing is Albanese hasn't actually made the huge effort either. Do you have any idea why that might be? Yeah.
Look, I think it's again because they are anxiously trying to retain male voters. And our system is so hopelessly male-dominated, and our men are so, you know, like I think a lot of men are like, well, if they're not talking about me, then, you know, it's somehow that they're not being spoken to, and then therefore they're going to kind of vote elsewhere. So voting, talking about women's issues, which are not women's issues, right? Like
No. Aged
care, childcare,
yes,
are not women's issues, but they tend to be categorised as such. And so I think, you know, there is a worry among the Labor Party that if you talk too much about that stuff and code it as female, you're going to turn off men, because men like to be at the centre of political conversations and, you know, and the political discourse in elections. So I think Albanese, it's interesting because I do think Ingrid Matthews had a really interesting piece where she sort of said, look, you know, photographs of Albanese holding a baby, the kind of aged care, childcare, Medicare message is all designed to resonate with women because they're the issues they nominate as the most important.
Yes.
But I think what it is interesting is they're not coming out and saying, "Women of Australia, you should vote Labor because we have got policies that appeal to women." They're trying to do it in a way that hits the notes that women believe and feel are important, but they're not doing it directly. So, you know, I think they are hitting those messages a lot, and certainly they're trying to avoid some of the blokiness of the Morrison presentation. You know, I mean, Albanese wears a hard hat and high vis like any other politician, but as I said, he's comfortable around women and babies, and there are lots of women in the ALP front bench, so that helps, I think, as well, you know, that sort of sense that there is a team of women in the party, whereas I think the Liberal Party have lost some of their most high-profile campaigners. Other women in the party are not very popular with voters, like Michaela Cash, so you can't really bring her out to campaign. You know, she's no Julie Bishop,
no,
who I think was very, very popular for the Liberal Party and very popular with women.
Yes.
And actually, I think the treatment of Julie Bishop within the Liberal Party, she was basically humiliated in that election, you know, the leadership spill in 2018 when Morrison became Prime Minister.
Yeah, I mean, I thought she'd take over, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just think a lot of women just went, that's it, I'm done with you guys, you know. And, I mean, even she's not coming out and endorsing her Liberal successor in Curtin. She thinks the Independent will win in her seat. You know, Julia Banks, Concetta Ferravanti-Wells, Catherine Cusack, there have been a lot of women on the Liberal side who are very keen to say how much they dislike the Prime Minister. So, you know, I think that does count for something, perhaps, particularly amongst women voters, women Liberal voters, I think.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to have to wrap it up there because we're almost about to go to the news, but it's so fascinating.
There's so much we could say.
so much. So, excuse me, I'm losing my voice today. Very, very quickly, do you think this will be a deciding factor in the election this weekend?
Look, I think it could be. I my sense of it is that women have been waiting to have their say on the Morrison government. Mm. Of course, I could well be eating these words on Tuesday, but I do, it's really hard to know.
It's so
but
hard.
But I do think that women's votes will be decisive in the outcome.
Brilliant. If you're on the fence about voting, if you are a woman, and even please vote anyway, have your say, but please, woman, please go vote.
Absolutely. And make sure you number every box, make sure your vote counts properly.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for that and joining us last minute, Michelle. Brilliant. And if you want to see your article, it is in The Conversation. And I look forward more to hopefully speaking to you more in the future and more commentary on it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Again, that was Professor Michelle Arrow from Macquarie University. She's a professor of history and especially in women's studies. And that is fascinating. And that is curious to me. I am curious as if you yourself are going to make the vote. And if you are, even though I don't have the option to vote, if you think that your vote doesn't count, well, it looks like it may very